Welcome to the Fatherhood is Lit podcast, where we talk about the best of times, but also pay respect and learn from the crazier times. Our presence matters. Take a ride with us as we show the world how we make our presence felt. Fatherhood is Lit. What's good, Fatherhood? I'm James Lopez, representing for the Fatherhood is Lit podcast, and today I got a real-life superhero on the show. He's coming straight from Southside Chicago, someone who has helped design and create some of the hottest Jordans out there. What's good, Jason Maiden? Thanks for being here.
Oh, man, no doubt. Thank you for having me, bro. Really appreciate everything you do. Fatherhood. It's an important topic that doesn't get the recognition in the...
That's a fact. So, man, you have done some dope things in the tech industry and even in the industry, in the sneaker industry. But a sneakerhead like me needs to know, man, what's your favorite pair of Jordans, bro?
The Air Jordan 4s, the military blues. Those probably by far my favorite ones. Those, yeah, I would say the 4s. Those are the ones.
All right, yeah, mine's are the 3, the elephant print blue. Those are definitely
dope, favorite. Dope.
Yeah, so you grew up in Southside Chicago, man. Were you able to buy Jordans as a youngster, bro? Tell me about your upbringing.
Chicago was a great place to be brought up, man. Honestly, it's different than what they portray on television. A lot of it is what I tell people. It's an open air architectural museum. It's an open air, you know, Black History Museum. It has so many different rich narratives that are interwoven into each community. It's hard not to fall in love with some form of creativity. So you can see in the industry, whether it's fashion, music, sports, like there's a huge influence from Chicagoans because of how we're brought up. But for me, you know, Jordans were obtainable. They've always kind of been an aspirational product. So my older brother who worked at Foot Locker, he would have them, and normally I would be able to, get them if he got them for me, or I would save my money. I would cut grass and shovel snow, and I would do everything possible to just invest in the things that I care. And particularly it was footwear. So, at a time where, people are telling us that Chicago wasn't creating anything beautiful, we had this superhero in real life, Michael Jordan, that allowed us to, expect better quality stories and better quality products from the companies we consumed and interacted with. So, yeah, man, not only did I have Jordans, but when I couldn't afford them, I would draw them and walk around with my sketches in my pocket, and people would say, "Yo, you got the J's?" And I'm like, yeah, kind of. So it was a way of being part, participating without being able to afford them. But what I can say, man, is Chicago, to me, is probably one of the best cities to be brought up in.
Oh, I love it. I love it, man. So you love sneakers so much that you even joined Nike at a young age, man. And you worked your way to becoming the global design director for Nike's Jordan brand. How did that feel coming from Chicago, and how did that even go about?
Man, I mean, honestly, man, it was overwhelming. I wrote letters to Jordan Brand since I was 10. Yeah, I was about 10, 11 years old when I first started writing letters to Nike in general. At that point, I didn't understand the difference in divisions of the company. I just knew that the company, signed Michael and had him as the face of their athletic brand. So I did everything I could, man, to prepare myself. I studied, I watched NBA Inside stuff repeatedly to see if there was any information I could glean from Ahmad Rashad. I would go to Foot Lockers and obsess over shoes and look at details and craft. And so eventually, after years of writing letters, I was given information about their internship. So within my junior year of undergrad, I was around 19 years old, because I got out of high school rather early, where they offered me an internship at Nike Basketball. But unfortunately, they lost the budget, and they reached out to me and they said, "Hey, we have this group that is deciding to get their first. Would you be interested? Actually, you would be one of their first interns. Have you heard of Jordan Brand?" Of course I heard of Jordan Brand.
Yeah.
Almost passed out after they told me. And I started at 19 and was there for about 14 years. They hired me right at the end of my internship. I went straight back after graduation. So you can say I came out of school and went to the league and went pro. So it was a beautiful experience, man. It set me up for tremendous, success going forward in my personal and professional life.
Yeah, man. I mean, me as somebody that loves sneakers and grew up on Jordans in the 80s and 90s, like, I could only imagine you were probably pretty close to fainting over there. So that's kind of dope, man. How about your parents? Like, how did they influence you to do that?
Both my parents are, they've been in love since they were 13 and 14. And their relationship was almost born out of impossibility, right? Like, my dad was in the military. He was 18. My mom was still in high school. She was 17. And they got married and had kids. So, you know, growing up, we knew that, you know, the odds that were placed against us weren't impossible. They definitely would be difficult, but, you know, our lives were not impossible. Our dreams were not impossible. And so we were just encouraged, you know, to be ourselves 100%. We had unconditional love. We didn't have a lot of money, but we had, you know, a lot of creativity. My mom was exceptionally creative in terms of just, you know, how she stretched the dollar, how she was able to, you know, refurbish things that we wore or find ways to coordinate things, you know, that we did, but not, you know, without paying any money. So I just watched my parents really be industrious and creative in how they raised us. Something they didn't do was rob us of, you know, I would say immersive education, enrichment. So they would always take us to museums. They would let us go, you know, and do volunteer work in the summertime at the libraries. They encouraged us to get out and explore our city. So we weren't afraid to dream big because it was normal to hear my parents talking about their aspirations in our home. So I think the best thing they did for me was to show me, A, that consistency and stability doesn't always have to be financial. Sometimes it can be emotional. Most times it's emotional. And B, they never really told me that who I was wasn't enough and who I was broken or crazy, because that's what the education system had told me. A second grade teacher told me I was broken. And I think that really, you know, impacted me significantly even to this day, because a lot of what I learned from being labeled as broken is that ambition can become toxic. And so my parents always counterbalanced the toxicity of ambition by giving me aspirational things to lean towards, you know, telling me that what I wanted to become, you know, was real and true. But I'll just say, man, the greatest thing they did was let me be me, you know?
Yeah, yeah. No, I spoke to Shannon McCullen, who's actually Little Yachty's dad. And that's something that he talked about, you know, how strong a foundation they gave him, and giving him that foundation from two parents that weren't together, they were co-parenting, it still led him to greatness because he felt he could do anything. So I think that's pretty dope.
Yep.
Yeah, so now you know, you're in the sneaker game, you're designing sneakers, your kids. Did you ever see them bragging to their friends like, yo, dad is the man, he's the one designing these Jordans?
Nah, not really.
Do you think they cared, or was it just like, this is dad?
I think we never made a big deal out of it. Like, I never got my kids every single shoe that came out. You know, they never had massive collections. They wore shoes until they had a hole in them. Mm-hmm. I wanted my kids to have a normal upbringing. I knew that it was abnormal, the life I was living. And in one generation, I had changed the educational and financial, you know, trajectory in my family. And sometimes for people of color, most times people of color, since we don't have generational wealth, it can actually be a detriment when you go from, you know, scrapping and scraping in a city to all of a sudden, you know, being, you know, on private planes with people. So I never wanted my kids to believe that what I did made me special. I wanted them to understand that what made me special is the fact that God chose me to be their father. Mm-hmm. I didn't make it about my job. I didn't make it about my title, because that can be taken from me. And then if I placed all of my self-worth within that title, my kids would see me fall apart if I never had that role. So what I did is I just opened them up to experiences. I explained to them the industry. I broke down the nuances of intellectual property. I broke down what biomechanics and kinesiology was. I exposed them to art versus design, science versus technology. That's how I engaged in the industry. And so my kids, although they knew that I had a very rare and interesting job, what they were more fascinated by was the stuff that I was able to teach them. You know, the learnings that they got, going to the research labs, being part of the photo shoot, seeing the process of the sketch to the sample, from sample to production. That was what I wanted my kids to obsess over. Not to disrespect any parents who, you know, bought all their kids every shoes when they were five, and, you know, they had everything from Supreme and the Carmen also, and they had no disrespect to parents who did that, but I felt like, you know, that those things turn our kids into consumers. I wanted my kids to be creators, so I never biased towards them thinking that my job is about getting people to conspicuously consume. I wanted them to understand that I had a gift, and my gift was to create things that empower people to live their dreams. So I took a different approach, and if you look at my kids today, it's interesting to hear what their career choices are, or at least their career interests. My son wants to be an intellectual property attorney, and my daughter wants to be an animator and an illustrator, but she also wants to have her own production company. So I wanted them to be business-minded. I wanted them to be entrepreneurial and know that just because I was doing what I was doing doesn't mean that they had to do that. So you know, I stayed, we were very deliberate because I couldn't imagine, you know, I saw enough of my friends and enough of my colleagues who were famous people who had children, and those children felt like they could never live up to their standard. I didn't want that for my kids. Mm. So I simply wanted them to be encouraged by me, but not feel burdened by me. My wife and I made conscious decisions to bring them up a certain way.
Oh, I love that, man. Encouraged by me, but not encouraged to be me, right? Like, that's what you said. They don't have to force themselves to be there.
Exactly.
No, that's exactly. Super dope. That's super dope because, you know, somebody like me that has been in the tech game for a while, a lot of my friends, they tell me, I know you want your kid to code. I know you want him to do startup stuff or entrepreneurship stuff. And to me, it's like, nah, man, I just want him to see me trying these things and hearing the stories about how many times people told me, no, I couldn't do it, and how I persevered through it. Like, that's the bigger lesson for me. So I love that, man. It's almost like Warren Buffett is, you know? So it feels really good to know that.
Yep, exactly.
So you, while working with Nike, you had a pretty cushy life, you know, flying privately and all of that stuff. You actually befriended Jordan, actually have a good friend named Phil Knight. Yo, why bounce? Why bounce from Nike and start your own company? Super heroic for kids, man. Well, what was your motivation? What's good
I think, several things play factor in me leaving. One, I wanted to be there for my son. You know, he had gotten sick around the age of 7, and I've always said that the only thing that would take me away from my dream job is if anything would happen with my family, and that's what occurred. Mm-hmm. So I put family over everything.
Yes.
Two, you know, while I love Nike and I was thankful to be there, it was a blessing. I never, deep down inside, was a lifer. I never wanted to stay there my entire career. I mean, quite honestly, I was a little bit, you know, shocked that my first job was my dream job. So imagine something you thought about for half your life, all of a sudden you're there. And then you have to think about, okay, what's next? You know, what do I do next? Because to reach your dream at the age of 20, you know, coming out of undergrad,
it's insane.
You know, how I was raised. I was like, you know, this is a blessing, but I can't just sit here and be settled and not aspire, not keep growing, not keep learning, because then it makes me an economic slave. Mm-hmm. And so I've always thought of ways to keep myself out of, you know, intellectually or cognitively or behaviorally, I would say, challenged, so that I'm able to grow. Because the one thing that happens in any corporation, specifically for creative people, if you don't have transferable skill sets, you become a designosaur. You're stuck within that industry and you can't actually create past a certain age because your mind and your experiences have been siloed. Yeah. And your view on the world becomes myopic. And the job of a designer is to ask the best questions that can serve humanity. So I had to always have a mindset of when I felt it was time, I needed to step away. But unfortunately, the prompt was my son being sick. But even after that, I still felt ready. I had just gotten back from grad school at Stanford. My mind had been expanded. I knew what, you know, creativity, not design, but creativity would become as an industry. And I wanted to be part of the future. And I had the chance of, you know, doing my first dream, but my next dream was to change the potential, you know, I would say trajectory of my family's name. And I knew that ownership was the only way to close the generational wealth gap. And I wanted to make sure that in my family, you know, my great grandchildren have the opportunity to not worry about finances and do things simply because it challenges them and gives them the structural foundation for them to build upon. So this is a legacy move. This isn't just for me. This is 2-3 generations out that I'm thinking about.
Yeah. Generational wealth. It's almost like the top isn't enough, right? Where it's like you get to where you think you want to go. And then when you get there, you realize that, man, there's so much more to go. And now you got to start thinking about the kids and how they're going to survive after you, you know, with your legacy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So I've read somewhere that you actually created Super Heroic because you wanted to help your child. With your oldest, I read that he was dealing with obesity at one moment, and you wanted to design the sneakers for him. My realest question there is, you know, how does it feel creating a solution for your child instead of just helping your child? Like, a lot of us always want to help our kids, right? And we always say, hey, we want to help our kids, but helping them and then creating a solution for them are two different things. So now that you created the solution, bro, how did that feel that first day when you actually had that prototype?
I felt great. I mean, I think one correction is it wasn't obesity he was dealing with. Okay. It was a hole in his lower intestine that made him become severely inflamed. He was basically under parasitic attack. and so his body became severely inflamed. And that was the thing that, you know, was the trigger for us to make it, to make a move, because when a child is fighting an invisible enemy, it can't explain why he gained weight rapidly, despite the fact that we're an active family. You can see how it can impact him emotionally. So when we had the prototypes, we had the physical product, you know, the brand positioning, the name, everything. Even when I left, you know, I told him, I said, I did this because of you. You're my motivation. You're my inspiration. So, you know, having a sample was only symbolic of the fact that the job that I couldn't fail at, the job I refused to fail at, was being his father. And he felt that, and he knew that. And I think from that, it gave him confidence that no matter what, we choose him, because so many different times throughout the life of specifically people of color, in our family, you know, we're Afro-Latino, so our kids are often felt like they're worth the strip from them. They have a lot of confidence, but they don't have a lot of self-worth. So by us making these decisions, we told him he was worth it, and he was valued, and he was loved. And you see it now at the age of 15, how he carries himself. He carries himself as a child who knows that he is loved and cared for. That's hugely important for our demographic of people, because of the fact that we never have that. We never have that chance to feel valued. And we try to accumulate valuable things in hopes of increasing our self-worth. But the reality is, net worth and self-worth are two different things. So my son needed to have his self-worth validated by me and my wife making a decision to step away from something that the world deemed desirable. But for us, it's just a job. It was just a job. I didn't own Nike. They could fire me at any minute, you know, just like they could fire anyone. And so we chose to buy a source of things that we know we refuse to fail at, which is parenting.
Yeah. I mean, that's super real right there, man. Like, that's, I think that's a dream for a lot of dads, right? Where they could provide and also do these extra things when they need to do it, and not have to focus on not just work, but society telling you to do certain things in a certain way. So I think that's huge. Yeah. And it's something that I do with my son, because, you know, we're Puerto Rican, and like my middle child is dark like me. So every day I call him, you know, when I call him, his nickname is Darky. And my wife used to hate it because she's Puerto Rican and Chinese, very light skinned. She was like, nah, you can't call him Darky. But my motivation was, I wanted to remind him that he was dark like me. And to me, that made him special, because that, I love all my kids. But having one that actually has my skin tone and my culture is a big deal. And I loved it. And I wanted him to feel comfortable in his skin. So this is dope that you did this. My kids actually helped me with Fatherhood is Lit. They're like my own little ambassadors. What about your kids? What roles do they have? And was it even hard to get them to be down with the company?
My kids were all in from day one. So my son was my original head of R&D. He still kind of helps me think through future stuff. You know, he, cause he's deep into technology and the video game culture, and, you know, so he helps me pull inspiration from video games. So typically they're near future. So they're about, you know, 2040. So they show, like, you know, technology that could be based on real technology. Mm-hmm. So generally he's the person I go to and looking for a quick inspiration on narrative or, you know, gadgets and stuff like that. My daughter, she's kind of like my thought partner. She's my wear tester. She wear tests all the products, her and her buddies, but she's still in elementary school. Mm-hmm. But she's also kind of the spirit of, you know, playfulness and, I would say, kind of not mischievousness, but that rambunctious kind of attitude. And we saw, like, the Punky Brewster type vibe. Like, that's my daughter through and through. You know, she's a very adorable, strong-willed, confident young girl that's comfortable in her femininity, but also comfortable in her intelligence and her strength. So, you know, they both kind of play a role in giving me and my wife inspiration. And more importantly, they remind me that no matter what the outcome, they're proud. If this company ceases to exist in a year or 2 years, man, you know, most people will feel so ashamed of themselves that they failed. But for me, my kids tell me every day how proud they are of me, how hard they see me working, how hard they know this is that I'm doing. So regardless of the outcome of this company, I feel accomplished that I showed my kids that you can make a decision, you can overcome the odds, you can create something from nothing, and you can do it joyfully without having to harm anyone. So they're my inspiration. They motivate me daily to keep pursuing this.
I think that's some of the greatest motivation out there, man. I think when kids are behind you, pushing you, I don't think it gets any better. Like that's actually really, 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 really dope to have that as motivation.
Indeed, indeed.
Yeah, so now when you see them out there representing the brand, man, like how does it feel? Like how do you like do you smile every time you see them, or do you say, those are my boys, that's my girl? Like, how does that feel, man?
Oh, man, I cry, to be honest with you.
You cry, bro?
Like, it's 100%, bro. Yeah. Like, the life I led, the stuff I seen growing up in Chicago, yeah. I shouldn't even be alive, bro. Like, exactly. So to be able to, you know, to sit there and see my kids interact freely without the same worry, the same concern, the same stress, you know, or PTSD that I had, you know, and still am working through seeing certain things in the city, to see them just be kids, like, that's what it's about, man. Like, when people talk about mother races, what they really are saying is certain people don't have to worry about everything all at once, right? And to see my kids being able to have a certain level of privilege where they don't have to worry about everything all at once, it's a blessing, man. So it's bigger than just representing the brand. They have what I would like to say is a relatively normal childhood. So that's a beautiful thing, to see them just, you know, have a puppy, ride a bike, go outside, play softball, you know, go hiking at Yosemite. I didn't have none of that, bro. I was, man, please.
Yeah.
We were going to Gary, Indiana. It was totally different. Right?
It was a different lifestyle.
Man, different lifestyle. Way different. So that's what gives me joy. That's what brings me to tears, is that, you know, it happened. It happened. The sacrifices of my ancestors manifested themselves, and, you know, the return of those sacrifices manifested in me. Like, I know I'm the ROI of my ancestors' investment, you know, and the things they didn't do, the decisions they did make, like all those years, man, from when they were first taken from Ghana, you know, 400 years ago, where our family is from, Burkina Faso in Ghana, and came here, they never in a million years would have thought they would have a descendant doing what I'm doing. So I understand the gravity of it, and that's what brings me to tears, is I'm thankful. It's not like overwhelming tears, like, you know.
That's happiness.
You know, I'm breaking down. But it's joy. Yeah, it's deeper to have. It's joy. And I'm thankful because I know what this represents for them. You know, it represents possibility.
Yeah, you know, it's crazy because I feel the same way. Like, my kids are, you know, I call it the white picket fence, right? Where they're chilling in a white picket fence, super safe, yeah. While I had to jump over pee in the projects, you know, and watch gun bullets fly by and all that. But now that they're privileged, sort of, it's like a point where I want them to be privileged and I want them to have a lifestyle that I didn't have, but I still want to keep them hungry. So how are you keeping your kids hungry?
Yeah. I mean, several things, man. You know, they both go to school in Oakland.
Okay.
So my son goes to Bishop O'Dowd High School. He, you know, we keep him amongst a certain socioeconomic mix. It's a college preparatory academy. It's application-based, rigorous pedagogy. So you got to be a kid that's smart to get in there. But it's kids from different backgrounds, different, you know, different circumstances. So he's able to sit next to a kid from East Oakland, sit next to a kid from Piedmont. And he understands both worlds because we keep him, you know, take him back to the south side of Chicago. We take him down to Columbia, where my wife's family is from. We make sure they understand, like, they didn't earn anything they got. They just were born to parents who had a certain level of financial need. Mm-hmm. However, because of their privilege, it's their responsibility to be a bridge for others and to defend others and to treat people fairly and equitably. We never make them feel like they should look down on people, should be afraid to look at people that look like them. They always see us, you know, they see me often on the street, you know, telling people, how you doing, brother? How you doing, sister? Shaking hands, you know, giving money to people in need. So I try to just exemplify it through my behavior, how you should handle yourself when you have more. And we keep them humble by just simply keeping them in the Word of God, talking to them about why giving these things and the responsibility that comes with it. And we never let them walk around feeling entitled like they've earned anything. It's like, no, you didn't earn it. You were born into it, but you're going to earn what's yours through your work and your effort. We don't tell them they're awesome. I think that word is misleading because you never let your kids really understand what it's like to develop grit and perseverance. So we tell them, you know, we praise them on their effort and their work ethic, not on their brilliance. We tell them, man, that was an amazing job. You put a lot of effort. Here's the details. So we've never baby-talked them. My wife and I are very specific on language. We don't let them say they can't. They always say yet instead of, you know, I can't do something. We say, no, I'm not able to do it yet. We're very, very specific, man, in how we raise them, because I want them to feel that their job is to be, you know, I would say protectors and defenders of disenfranchised people. or people who feel lost or left behind or overlooked. Like, I feel like I'm trying to raise my kids to be the heroes that, that we really need them to be. That keeps them humble because they see me walking that path. They see me saying no to things that other people would honestly say, man, just do it. It's a ton of money. But they've seen me many a time say no because I refuse to sell my soul to just make more money or do something that is cool if it doesn't feel like it's truly going to help me with my life's purpose. So, in conclusion, my TED Talk was all about really just, you know, you are what you do is what your children learn. You know, they only can become what they see. So if you're not displaying the things you want them to inhabit in their spirit as they get older, no matter what you say to them, they'll be corrupted people. So it's really about walking the walk.
Oh no, that's real as hell. That's the truth right there. Like, that's something that, you know, coming from the South Bronx, like I do the same thing with my kids, where it's like I teach them about paying it forward by actually paying it forward. I teach them about hustling in the hustling world by actually hustling. Like, I let them see all the no's, but then they get to enjoy all the yeses too. So it's like, man, you know, you won't get this yes unless you get a couple of those no's. And it keeps them very, very humbled. And, you know, they same thing with bullies. You know what I mean? They take care of their people.
Yep. You know? Exactly, bro. Exactly.
So now with you, like, you know, you're keeping them humble and everything like that. But come on, man, you partnered with Foot Locker for Hero Day. You have a day with Pharrell, Something in the Water. And then now you got Nickelodeon Slime Fest. Come on, man. Like, it's hard to keep a kid humble when they're up in all these dope events, man. Because I know my son saw that that Slime Fest and he was like, oh, daddy, you got to get us there. You got to get us there. So what do you tell him about these events and how hard you work to actually set it up?
Well, I tell them, quite frankly, that there are some people who will save up for years to come to this event. They did nothing but just be born into the right family. You know? So I explained to them the differences in the families that will participate and how some of that family is our own. You know, and they're pretty appreciative kids. You know, they're very aware of the uniqueness, their access. They're very aware of the privilege they have. And so, you know, those events, you know, Slime Fest and so forth, they've been hearing me explain, you know, how we want them to approach these moments since they were babies. You know, I was at All-Star Weekend, I was at World Series, I was at Super Bowl, I was, you know, private parties. I've been around it from my early 20s, late teens. So I've always been able to explain to them, like, yeah, that's fun that you're at this moment, but end of the day, appreciate it. But don't feel like you're chasing it. That doesn't make you special. That doesn't make you different. It just gives you a different perspective, but it doesn't make you better than anyone else. So at this stage, now that it's my own direct company and it's the things different, their parents manifest, you know, from my kitchen table, they don't really covet it as much as you would expect. And I got to give credit to my wife, too. You know, she keeps them exceptionally humble, you know, in the way that she speaks to them about me. You know, when I'm traveling or when I'm working, she's explaining to me her dad is working exceptionally hard for X reason, for this reason. He's fighting for these people. He's lecturing at this place because these people need this type of message and he's said in this way. So she's a great, I would say, partner and co-pilot in helping our kids navigate this world of privilege and access because she reminds them of the purpose of it all. You know, so It is that one-two kind of combination that helps us raise it in the way that we want it to be raised.
Yeah, I mean, I think you know, dads are superheroes, man. Like, we could do anything we want whenever we want, but we still need help from the village, right? And that's our wives, that's our moms, our grandmas, the aunties, the uncles. Everybody out there needs to pitch in when you want to create like a really strong foundation for your child.
Absolutely.
Two more questions for you, man. So you want kids to play, and you started Super Heroic for that same reason. When's the last time you played a game at the park, man? With your kids, like a game of freeze tag or something.
Oh, last weekend.
Yeah, did you feel like a superhero after, bro? Or did you feel sore like I usually do?
Nah, man, I stretch before I go out and play, so I was a Gucci, thankfully. It's fun, man. We do it a lot. You know, we're a very adventurous family. We try to get out on bike rides and hikes and a little fun stuff here and there, man, because I'm at the opposite end of the spectrum with my son. I have 3 years left, so I'm doing a countdown. He's going to college in 3 years. And so for me, I'm doing the math of, okay, I have this amount of time. I have this many lessons I want to teach him, this many books I need for him to read. I prepare his mind in a certain way. So let's create these memories where I can carve out these little moments where I can talk to him one-on-one. So, and we try to pursue it actively as much as possible, man, just to have our kids leave with the confidence and the knowledge that they are loved and they're part of something bigger.
Yeah. No, I think that's crazy, man. I think it's so dope to even hear these things. I think you just proved to us that we could be superheroes ourselves, right? But also our kids could be superheroes if we help them. Yep. That's something that's really, really big to me.
Yep. We have to, man. We have to prepare them. The problems they're going to inherit have not ever faced humanity. There's never been, I would say, an ecological crisis like this. It's never been a systemic, level of injustices that are only getting worse as each day passes. It's never been so much debt for going and getting educated. There's never been so much corruption in our healthcare system. Like, this is a very unique time period that they're living in where we have the means to solve these problems, but not the motivation. And so I think our kids have to be viewed as heroes. They have to be given a mission. They have to have their purposes encouraged, because the opposite end of that, the right tail of that distribution curve, on the left, our kids who are being encouraged to be heroes. On the far right, our kids are being encouraged to be consumers and question answers instead of question askers. So if we're not careful, we'll have a generation of kids, man, who simply will learn how to take direction, and they will do everything they're told, because that is how they've been instructed their entire life. So I'm trying to create free thinkers, not only in my kids, but through the company that I've started. It's really important, man. It's really important.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think especially now with tech, tech gives and it takes. Now the issues, like you said, the issues that they're going to have to face, especially with technology later on, we haven't been through it, man. Like, I'm still getting over 56K modems, man. Like, cyberbullying, I'm old enough to, tell a cyberbully, come see me. They're not, it's a whole different level of growth right now. So now, you created these kicks, man. Last question, how can people contact you and how can they buy these dope kicks? Because I know my sons love them and I want other people to experience them also.
Man, I appreciate you. I say best way, man, just hit me on Instagram. That's the quickest. I try not to give out my email or cell phone stuff just because I'm so overwhelmed.
Oh, yeah.
I carve out that space for, I compartmentalize my energy to make sure that I'm channeling in the right direction. So I tell people to choose to hit me on IG. It's the quickest and it's the safest, And then in terms of the kicks, superheroic.com first. They'll be in, Foot Lockers and Kids Foot Lockers around the country soon, within June for the Flying Fest kicks. We had a small run that went out for our event in Detroit and Philly, but they're going to start to hit the national doors relatively soon. But definitely check out superheroic.com for everything. Same thing on social at superheroic. On social, I'm at Jason Mayen, so it's pretty straightforward. Yeah, we're here.
Yeah, I mean, you just taught us that, there's super dads out there, but in order to become a super dad, you need that super foundation, and you're living through it. You're actually living proof where you're trying to provide that foundation for your kids, where they could be the superheroes of the world. And I love it. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for doing that.
No doubt, man.
Yeah, so to all the Fatherhood is Lit community, remember, your presence never has to be boring, and we are all superheroes. Thank you, Jason, for dropping gems and showing us how a real-life superhero gets down, bro. I truly, truly appreciate it.
Appreciate you, bro.
Thank you, man. And sell those millions, man. Get Jordan and Phil Knight to call you over one day and be like, yo, man, we'll buy you out, man. You're competing too much.
That's the plan, man. That's the plan. Make them take notice.
That's right, man. Wake up.
Yep, 100%.
Well, thank you for your time once again, Jason, man. I know you run into the next meeting. Get your hustle on, man. Thank you.
Yes, I appreciate you, bro, man. Be well, dog.